Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, our weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Well, a very musical edition this week, for which we'll be offering some complimentary tickets, so you'll want to stay tuned. You'll hear about the Golden Gate Men's Chorus, upcoming performances of Durafle's Requiem, performed in collaboration with the San Francisco Girls Chorus at Mission Dolores Basilica this weekend. Chorus members Michael Begale and Giacomo DiGrigoli join me. Conductor Mitchell Sardou-Klein and trumpeter Mary Elizabeth Bowden talk about their collaboration for this weekend's concerts with the Peninsula Symphony, which features the Aratunian Trumpet Concerto and Rimsky-Korsakov's massive Scheherazade. Also on the conducting front, Benjamin Simon tells us about this Sunday afternoon's upcoming San Francisco Chamber Orchestra Gala, SFCO Goes to the Movies, which will feature live accompaniment to two silent films. You'll also get some highlights from the upcoming 60th San Francisco International Film Festival from Rachel Rosen, the director of programming. Stay with us. That's music from the first movement of the Trumpet Concerto by Benjamin Aratunian, performed by Mary Elizabeth Bowen, who joins me in studio, along with Maestro Mitchell Sardou-Klein, to talk about that work and the rest of this weekend's Peninsula Symphony Orchestra program. Mary has been featured as soloist with orchestras around the country and abroad, tours with her group Seraph Brass, a quintet composed of America's top female brass performers, that will be featured at the Leksa Brass Week in Finland this year, among other venues. She also performs in recital both in solo programs and a duo with her husband, also a trumpeter, David Dash. Among her other activities, she is currently principal trumpet of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra and has served as principal trumpet for several orchestras in her professional life. Mary, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, joined by Mitchell Sardou-Klein, conductor of the Peninsula Symphony and the Peninsula Youth Symphony Orchestra, among other groups, who he appears regularly on a variety of podiums in the country and elsewhere. Mitch is in his 31st season as directing the Peninsula Symphony, which is in its 68th season. The concerts Friday at Sampac and Saturday at Heritage Theater in Campbell pay tribute to women in music by not only featuring Mary as soloist, but also featuring the music of Anna Klein, with the Peninsula Symphony's concert mistress, Deborah Fong, featured in the prominent lead musical voice of Scheherazade in Rimsky-Korsakov's orchestral masterpiece. Maestro Klein, always a pleasure to welcome you back to our airwaves.
Great to be back with you, David.
Well, I should begin with full disclosure. I have a rather personal bias for the Peninsula Symphony. I've been playing flute and piccolo with you now for, gosh, I think 12, 13 years,
something like that, and very well, I might add.
Thank you very much. and as of late, also offering some of the pre-concert talks, which have been a lot of fun, so I thank you for that opportunity.
That's marvelous. Enjoy it.
Mary, welcome to the Bay Area. Have you spent much time in San Francisco at all?
I have. We have some family that lives in the area, so I've been here over the years, but this is my first time being here as a performer, so I'm very excited to be here.
Mm-hmm. I should have also mentioned in the orchestra that you're a member of the Richmond Symphony and the Des Moines Metro Opera Orchestra. Now, here in the Bay Area, we have a number of musicians participating in what we fondly call the Freeway Philharmonic. But, I don't know, Richmond, Des Moines hardly seems like an easy commute unless we're talking about a different Richmond than the one my sister lives near in Virginia.
I do live a very nomadic life, but I mainly work as a soloist and mainly with my brass quintet, but I love the variety that I have, you know, something different to do every week. It's a very exciting life.
We probably had some similar youth experiences in that I was a guy playing the flute and you were a girl playing the trumpet. Was that a bias that existed for a long time growing up?
Well, I had an interesting start when I started the trumpet in the fifth grade band. For a couple of years, I kept tying for first chair with two other girls.
Huh.
So I did not see it as something that was not normal when I first started playing.
And, of course, in the 21st century, several of the greatest trumpet players in the world, especially in Europe, are women. The mold has been broken,
I have to point to Jean-Pierre Rampal and James Galway on my sex end.
Absolutely.
Of things.
Absolutely.
Sure, you mentioned that in the other rehearsal. So, Mary, when did you decide that trumpet was going to be it for you? How early did you start in?
Pretty much on my first day. I loved practicing, and I've always been obsessed with finding a great sound, and I just fell in love with the instrument on the first day, and I think that was the moment, and I just went full force from day one.
That's probably why you're soloing around the world and I'm not, because I don't really like practicing that much anymore. Do you still enjoy, you know, working out the finer details of the trumpet?
I do.
You must.
I do. It's you learn something new every day and every week, and I think that's the great part about being a musician is you just keep learning and growing over the years.
Mm-hmm. This Aratunian concerto is by a composer who's probably, you know, affectionately termed a one-hit wonder. This was written in 1950. Armenian Soviet composer. When did you first encounter the Aratunian yourself?
This was actually the first concerto that I performed with orchestra when
really?
I was 17 years old. It was at this music festival called Birch Creek in Wisconsin, and I got to perform it two nights in a row, and it was my first piece performing by memory, and that's when I really felt that being a soloist on stage was what I really wanted to do.
And where else have you performed this recently?
I performed this with the Springfield Symphony last season in Missouri. That was the most recent.
Talk to us a little bit about Aratunian, Mitch.
Well, in a way, he's an indirect descendant of Rimsky-Korsakov, and that kind of connects the program because it is an extremely colorful, brilliantly orchestrated piece.
Yeah. Welcome to live radio, Mitch.
Yeah, thanks. And Rimsky-Korsakov was the great orchestrator in Russia and in the world, and his next generation, the students who worked with him, Stravinsky and Glazunov, eventually filtered their style of robust orchestration down to Aratunian himself. And he wrote much other great music, but this, as you say, is the one piece that is in the major rep.
Well, you know, having lived with this now a few weeks myself, playing in the section for the flute section for this piece, there's some very distinct Russian Armenian gestures that we'll hear. You just immediately recognize it as that kind of a flavor, and it's that folk flavor that's added in.
Absolutely true, and also because it's a Russian piece from the 50s and 60s, there's a real interest in jazz, and in the slow movement, I think there are some very jazzy trumpet licks that connect immediately to an audience.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the overall season here for the Peninsula Symphony. Very conscious, season-long celebration of women in music. I mentioned that Mary's going to be our soloist, our concert mistress, Deborah Fong, featured for Scheherazade. And then Anna Klein is featured as a composer.
Yes, and this piece is, well, the whole process of deciding to do a work by a living female composer on each program this year has been very renewing, very fun, and very exciting. It turns out, of course, it's not at all difficult to find pieces that mesh with other program elements, no matter what they are. There's just so much out there. And this is definitely a piece of the repertoire that has been left out in the Bay Area. Most of the orchestras are really not focusing on this very rich vein of musical treasures. But this piece in particular, Anna Klein's Masquerade, is far from obscure. She wrote it as a commission for the last night of the proms, maybe the biggest orchestral event in London, in England, for the calendar year. So it was celebrated from its beginnings. It was played by, I think it was London Phil at that opening program, and with Maren Alsop conducting. And so it's a piece that kind of started at the top. And it's a brilliant, fun, glorious, glorious piece of music. It attempts to replicate and does brilliantly a sort of 18th century street festival. And it is just a fabulous and quite complex piece.
And we need to give a little shout out to our assistant conductor, Chad Goodman, who's done an amazing job bringing this piece together. It's a very complicated piece, as you mentioned.
It's rhythmically, metrically, very, very complicated. Lots of different colors and very thick orchestration. In a way that makes it more difficult, in a way it makes it less difficult, but it's quite a monster to pull together, and he's done a great job. Mm.
And he's all over the map now, too. I mean, Chad is really working hard. He's a tremendous conductor.
Absolutely.
While we're going on here, we should mention that the concert Friday at 8 o'clock is at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center and Saturday at the Heritage Theater in Campbell. I started this thought with the whole season being a celebration of women in music. Now, this obviously had to be planned quite a bit in advance.
Oh, sure.
Was this planned with the outlook of someone else in the White House as a celebration? Instead of a two hands in the air, we have one hand in
right.
defiance?
I'm happy to portray it that way, but I can't honestly say that was its origin. But the logo that we're using for the name of this particular concert at this particular moment, which is Women in March, the actual font comes from the Women's March. So we played off that as a marketing tool. I don't know whether that counts as a political act. But in any case, we're very, very happy to see this particular segment of the repertoire being developed and exposed. And this particular concert really has a great focus on the fabulous contributions of women in classical music.
Mm-hmm. Back to Mary with a fabulous CD that you have put out recently. Let's hear an excerpt from that. What are we going to hear from the CD?
This is Joseph Turin's Escapade.
Mary Elizabeth Bowden from her new CD, which you can get at marybowden.com. Excerpt from Escapade from Mary Elizabeth Bowden's CD Radiance. Music by Joseph Turin with Alexandra Carlson at the piano. Yeah, he's at the piano.
He's a piano guy.
Beautiful, beautiful playing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So while you're in the Bay Area, I understand you're going to be involved with some other activities on the musical front?
Yes, next week I am performing a recital at California State East Bay on Tuesday, and Wednesday I'll be getting a master class at the school as well.
Fantastic. And then from here, where do you go?
From here, I'm going home for a couple of days.
Well, I mentioned in the introduction that your husband, David, is also a trumpet player. That must make for... How do the neighbors handle that?
I think a neighbor, I was practicing till midnight the other night and someone yelled from their house, so I think I need to stop doing that. But as long as we keep it in daytime hours of practicing, we haven't had any complaints.
Well, that's what mutes are for, right? A practice mute or a harmony mute or something. Well, congratulations on the beautiful CD. I mentioned marybowden.com, MaryBowden.com. Performances on Friday at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center of the Aratunian Trumpet Concerto with the Peninsula Symphony, Saturday at the Heritage Theater. Hang out while we talk a little bit about Scheherazade, would you? Mitch, so, wow, this Scheherazade is one of those seminal works, orchestral works, by one of the most brilliant orchestrators that ever existed, that knew the orchestra so well.
Conducting Scheherazade is like driving a Ferrari. For a conductor, you have...
I don't think you can use a Russian car model to explain that.
No, it's better than driving a Lada. I've driven a Lada, and believe me, that's not the ultimate driving experience, as they say on television. It really is the most brilliantly orchestrated, the most perfectly shaped piece of storytelling that exists. There are others that are maybe equally great, but this is as good as it gets.
So there's the beautiful Melania, I mean Scheherazade, who is wed to one of the wives of the Sultan.
Yes, this goes back to 1001 Nights. It's not a story that passes muster socially anymore, but still a fabulous tale, and the Sultan Shahryar, as we remember from 1001 Nights, is in the habit of selecting a new wife each night and putting her to death and starting fresh in the morning. And this is
not just divorcing them and finding someone better. I'm sorry, I'm going to stop going
more,
there.
More in the line of Henry VIII than other people we could name who have multiple brides.
Gotcha.
So, Scheherazade comes along, and she has these extraordinary storytelling and mesmerizing personal characteristics, and she tells him 1001 tales, of which only four appear, well, actually maybe five or six if you include all the little sub-episodes in Rimsky-Korsakov's piece. And the East, what they called the Orient, was a great fascination in all of Europe in the late 19th century, and this is no exception.
It was actually a series of prints that I think Rimsky-Korsakov saw and then based the story on that and then learned more about the tales. Let's hear a couple of the main themes, and then maybe we'll have a longer excerpt.
Sure. The Sultan himself is depicted appropriately, demonically, as this pounding evil force. And then there couldn't be a greater contrast than the mesmerizing, serene Scheherazade, played, I have to say, extremely beautifully by our wonderful concertmaster, Deborah Fong. And here's how she's depicted. I know most people are very familiar with, but it is just glorious. You can just feel your blood pressure depressurizing as we go through this.
We should mention that not only does the soloist, concertmaster soloist, have these beautiful passages, but everyone in the orchestra, particularly the principals and the winds, get a real tremendous workout through this.
It is hugely difficult and brilliant and lyrical, and he has such a great sense of how to build colors in the third movement, which is the story of the young princess and the young prince. Her pleading sort of seduction of this stuffy prince who has no time for that is just so plush and so rich and rewarding to for all of the string players in the orchestra to play, and then the military march that he's focused on and ignoring her is also just brilliantly done. Lots of interesting percussion and great piccolo part, I might add.
I'll spare people from playing that piccolo part on the air today.
Well, it's a small room, but so the way that he depicts these characters and plays with them and sees the story develop uses orchestration in addition to melodic invention in a really specially extraordinary way.
Let's just hear a little bit of the final movement as the Rimsky-Korsakov so brilliantly depicts the ship and the waves and amazingly.
Yeah, the first movement is Sea and Sinbad's Ship, and the second one is Calendar Prince. The third one is this love story that finally plays out happily in the end. But during the fourth one, it starts off with a festival in Baghdad, which is extremely colorful and brilliant. But then somehow we find ourselves back on Sinbad's ship, and it is rocking and rolling.
As we listen in on that, I'm going to offer some complimentary tickets to either Friday's performance. Friday is at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center at 8. Saturday at the Heritage Theater in Campbell. 415-841-4134, the number to call. 841-4134. 5 pairs of tickets to the Peninsula Symphony this coming weekend. If you show up at 7, you'll hear some extra comments from me. Mitchell Klein, thanks for coming in today. I'm looking so forward to this and then to the Planets coming up in May.
Thanks very much, David. Always a pleasure to be here.
415-841-4134 here. Mary Elizabeth Bowden performed the Aratunian Concerto as well as Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade. 841-4134. Peninsula Symphony performing Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade this weekend. 415-841-4134 for tickets and information. Go to the Peninsula Symphony website. And for more of the wonderful music of Mary Bowden, you can go to her website, marybowden.com, MaryBowden.com. Well, this weekend you can join two of the Bay Area's most recognized and highly regarded performing arts organization, the San Francisco Girls Chorus and the Golden Gate Men's Chorus, for a performance of a great 20th century choral masterpiece, Maurice Durufle's Requiem. The Girls Chorus being joined by the Golden Gate Men's Chorus for a first-time collaboration in this musical tour de force with additional works by each chorus. Here to talk about the concerts and the new CD are Michael Begale and Giacomo Di Grigoli. Gentlemen, welcome to Open Air and sharing a little bit of time with us.
Hey, thanks for having us, David.
Thanks, we appreciate it.
Of course. Well, let's talk about the new CD you guys have out, though. Yeah. Let's start with an excerpt from that, if we could.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to play you a piece by composer Vytautas Miškinis, one of my favorite pieces, and I think Michael's favorite as well, I Will Lift Up Mine Eyes.
Thank you.
an excerpt from I Will Lift Up Mine Eyes, Vytautas Miškinis.
Miškinis.
From the beautiful new CD of the Golden Gate Men's Chorus, Out of the Deep, conducted and directed by Joseph Piazza, the Golden Gate Men's Chorus director. Wonderful sound that's available on iTunes and Spotify. You can have a little excerpt at their website, ggmc.org. Beautiful singing. Were you both involved in the recording of this?
Absolutely.
We were, yep.
And where was that?
We at a bunch of different places, actually. I think St. Ignatius was a great partner for us, and we recorded a lot of it there. I think a couple of tracks are live, bits and pieces.
It's been combined with a few recordings that we've done.
Yeah.
And they mashed it together.
And some studio performing as well, or is there all from live performances?
All from performances at St. Ignatius, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how, when did you guys first get involved with the chorus?
Gosh, I've been a member since I was just a wee kid when I first moved to San Francisco in 1999. So I joined the group in 2001. So
wow, fantastic.
Yeah, part of the GGMC has been around now for 35 years, founded in 1982.
So correct.
Yeah, it's a very rich rich.
Well,
history.
I know Joe Jennings was involved with the chorus for a long time. He was one of the founders of Chanticleer.
Yes,
he
indeed.
Did some wonderful work with you guys.
Yes, he did. And I had the good fortune of singing with Joe for quite a few years.
It's Giacomo. How about you, Michael?
I started about 4.5 years ago, right when I moved to San Francisco. I knew that I loved choral singing, and I used to be a choir teacher. So,
oh, fantastic.
It's a fantastic group for music excellence, and came right to it, and it's been my other home ever since then.
Where do you move out from?
Chicago.
Ah.
The land of choral, like young children choral singing. Right?
Cold choral singing.
Cold choral singing, yes.
It's a cold read. So let's talk about this collaboration with the San Francisco Girls Chorus, a fantastic organization that has been around a long time as well. They've upped their performance game quite a bit, especially over these past several years.
Yeah, Grammy Award meetings. In fact, I think I was talking to one of the moms who was sitting in the audience, and they're actually now old enough that I believe that there are 4 members of the group who are legacy members whose mothers were actually members of the San Francisco Girls Chorus. So it's really great to kind of see the tradition continue on.
Nate, I've talked with Lisa Bialawa as well before, artistic director, and Valerie Santagat, who's music director and principal conductor, then both involved in helping prepare for this concert, I'm sure. And singing in Mission Dolores must be an interesting experience, too. It's such a big hall.
Yeah, it's tremendous. In fact, doing the Durfle there, especially, Durfle was an organist himself, and so as a composer, he really gravitated towards the instrument. And the Durfle, his Requiem, really shows off this big, booming, gorgeous sound, like nothing I've ever heard in Mission Dolores. It's really fantastic.
And there's something to be said about what the girls bring to the group. They have such a beautifully pure children's sound that in the space it rings.
Yeah.
Right next to the men, and you can see them get so excited to sing with the men, and we all sit there and stop and listen to them. That they're
it's jaw dropping. They're really incredible. And we were Michael and I were talking before as well. And it's really interesting to be singing, this Requiem piece with a group of young girls. I mean, the juxtaposition of the GGMC, who's a group of men in their 30s through 60s. Many of them are gay men.
We have a few 20-year-olds.
Yeah, a couple. many who lived through the AIDS crisis in the 80s and 90s and really contemplated their own mortality in a way that we can bring to the music and then juxtapose with these young girls who, you wonder, what they're sort of channeling, and hopefully they're not thinking about, those sorts of issues, just enjoying their youth. But, then you get to a piece.
Probably thinking more about a requiem for the country than about
any
particular individual.
Yes. But you get to a movement like the In Paradisum at the end, and you realize that, the whole piece is this sort of struggle about sort of contemplating humanity. And the last piece is this beautiful expression of faith, and it's not just a sort of religious faith, but it's also faith that we will pass on the beauty of the artistry of the tradition and of this music, and just to see these young girls, these extraordinary musicians, and have the opportunity to sing with them just brings it to a whole other level for us.
While that movement is fresh in our minds, you both mentioned that it is a favorite movement of the movement of the Durafle. Let's talk more after we hear a little bit of that In Paradisum. Maurice Durufle's music. an excerpt from Durufle's Requiem, the plain chant from ancient times in Paradisium. But what an incredible setting and subtlety he brings to that.
Yeah.
And who will be the organist for these concerts?
Our organist is our accompanist, Fred Cummins, who is an extraordinarily talented musician. And the GGMC actually competed in Monterey just a few months back. We won a gold medal in our competition. But a large part of that was in thanks to Fred, who was described by the judges as our secret weapon. Durufle himself being an organist, he described the Requiem as one of the most challenging pieces for organ. I mean, Fred's feet are flying everywhere and the layering of the chords, I mean, just to sort of watch him playing it is really extraordinary. So I think it's worth coming this weekend alone, even just to watch Fred. He's tremendous.
Talking with Giacomo DiGrigoli and Michael Begale about the San Francisco Girls' Chorus collaboration with Golden Gate Men's Chorus this Saturday at 8, Sunday at 4 p.m. at Mission Dolores here in San Francisco. Durufle's, the earlier segment I talked about with the Peninsula of Benjamin Arutunian. Don't think of many pieces that Benjamin has done other than the Trumpet Concerto written in 1950. Likewise with Durufle, he was very spare, but very...
Yeah, he was. He didn't write very many pieces. I think it was only like 14 pieces or something like that. Just a really small set of music. He was. He's a perfectionist. He was known for actually like destroying most of the things that he composed, and he was so incredibly self-critical. So the fact that the Requiem has endured and has become this beloved piece by so many is really a testament to his work.
One thing I just discovered, and I'm glad he didn't destroy, although I haven't heard it yet, I'm looking forward to discovering, the only chamber work he wrote that he had published was for flute, viola, and piano, called Prelude Recitatif and Variations, Opus 3, so I'm looking forward to exploring that work. This piece was completed in 1947,
yep.
And again,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's one of those pieces that rarely gets out of the repertoire. It's always there, because it's so beautiful. The forces of the San Francisco Girls' Chorus, joined by the Golden Gate Men's Chorus this Saturday and Sunday. We do have tickets, five pairs of tickets for either Saturday or Sunday's performance. For listeners who call 415-841-4134, 415-841-4134 for the concert at Mission Dolores on 16th Street, Saturday at 8, Sunday at 4 p.m. But the Durufle is not the only thing on the program. Gentlemen, tell us a little bit more about what you individually will be doing as chorus, chori.
Yeah, so the GGMC, the smaller counterpoint group, just to feature one of the pieces we're doing another piece by Vytautas Miškinis called... basically Shakespeare's Sonnet 15, When I Consider. The concert is very much a contemplation on sort of mortality and life and sort of those things, and a lot of it is French. So we're going to be doing a piece by Debussy, a lot of the sort of early impressionists as well that influenced Durufle. We're going to be doing a piece by Camille Saint-Saëns, the Hymne au Printemps, which we're actually going to be conducted by Valérie Sandagat as well. She's going to be suffering through our butchering of the French language, which is a personal struggle of mine.
She prefers the word fleur.
Yes, fleur. But we're going to be doing quite a bit of pieces. And the girls' chorus will be doing their set as well. It's also incredibly stunning.
Arvo Pärt's piece upon Jerusalem will be featured by the San Francisco Girls' Chorus, I imagine, then.
Yep.
And Darius Mio, is that a piece that you guys are doing, or the girls' chorus?
The girls' chorus.
Devant sa main nue. Again, I'm butchering my own French there.
It's not easy. Valerie will be very forgiving.
Again, we have five pairs of tickets still available. 415, actually four pairs now. 415-841-4134. The concerts are this Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 4 p.m. in Mission Dolores. So, gentlemen, you mentioned that the chorus is more than just singing in a chorus. It's really a community of men that are a family.
Yeah, it is definitely family for me. I mean, there are few friends that I've had throughout the whole time. You know, we're there to support each other and lift each other up, and I think it just increases the depth of the musicianship as well. You know, there are moments where, like I said, we're singing this Shakespeare sonnet piece, When I Consider, and it's all about you know, how you engraft, the final line is how we engraft someone new when you, as time sort of ravishes you and moves forward and sort of takes your youth away. And it's this beautiful moment where we're all singing together and just sort of look across and think, God, I've known you since you were 23 years old. And I still look at you and I still see you just as you were then, even though we're much older and a little grayer and balder now.
When I take a look at it, one of my favorite parts about being in the choir is the age range.
Yeah.
You come into a group of men that have so many beautiful life experiences that we're able to learn and share every day. Mm. And so you come in and you sing and you're going for this one goal to create artistry. And when you have that combination of people, it really creates something special and unique and a different lookout at a performance.
It's Michael Begale. He's with Giacomo De Grigoli. They're both performing as part of the Golden Gate Men's Chorus this Saturday and Sunday. How big is the chorus now? What kind of forces are we talking about?
51.
51. Well, let's hear a little bit more of the Du Rufle. You both mentioned that the Sanctus would be a nice movement to go out on. Thanks for coming in, guys. I wish you an incredible performance. I'm looking forward to it myself.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
The Sanctus movement from Maurice Durufle's Requiem, Opus 9. On that recording, you heard the voices of Ascension Chorus and Orchestra under the direction of Dennis Keane. Joseph Piazza leads the Golden Gate Men's Chorus and the San Francisco Girls Chorus this Friday, this Saturday at 8, Sunday at 4 p.m. at Mission Dolores Basilica. I'm David Latulippe. You're listening to Open Air. Still to come, we'll have Ben Simon talk a little bit about this Sunday's gala for the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. And next, well, the longest-running film festival in the Americas, the San Francisco International Film Festival, an extraordinary showcase of cinematic discovery and innovation, gets underway April 5th through the 19th at various venues across the Bay Area and features nearly 200 films and live events, 14 juried awards with close to $40,000 in cash prizes and upwards of 100 participating filmmaker guests. Here to talk about it is Director of Programming for the festival, Rachel Rosen. Rachel, welcome to Open Air.
Thanks for having me.
Well, 60 years, that's an amazing accomplishment. How did it all get started?
There was a very forward-thinking gentleman named Irving Bud Levin, who was an exhibitor in the Bay Area, and he had seen a few other film festivals pop up in the world. There really weren't very many at the time. And he was also interested in bringing international films to the San Francisco Bay Area. And he had this idea to create an international film festival. It was around the same time in the Bay Area that the United Nations was forming here. And so I think there was an awareness of San Francisco and what its place in the world could be. And he had the vision to see that cinema was a growing art and that this would be a great way of bringing the international film community to the Bay Area for Bay Area audiences to see these incredible films that weren't generally available at the time.
Hmm. So what did it look like in the early days? It obviously didn't have quite the scope, and it just must have grown year after year.
Yeah, it's been an international film festival from day one. So that's one thing that has continued throughout our 60-year history. It's also been a festival of discovery from day one. So that first festival featured a competition of about a dozen films by unknown filmmakers at the time, but you look back and it included Satyajit Ray and Vida and Antonioni, and some of the films that we now consider classics were shown at that first film festival in 1957. I think what's changed the most about the festival in the past 60 years is the audience, because when it started, it was very much a society event. There was a moment in the 60s when the festival took place at the Opera House, and you know, women were wearing elbow-length gloves. And there's a very famous incident in the 60s where a group of protesters basically pied festival attendees because they wanted to call out what an elitist organization or event it was. So that, of course, is a huge change because the festival as it stands now is a really great community event. And it is open to anyone in the world to come attend, which isn't true of all festivals now. You know, the big festivals like Cannes and Berlin, often you have to be accredited or you have to be part of the industry or it's hard to get tickets. This is a festival for the city of San Francisco.
How long have you been involved with the festival?
I have been involved in the festival on and off since 1991. This is my 18th festival.
Wow,
that I've been
fantastic.
Involved in.
And as director of programming?
I've been director of programming for 8 years.
That must take a village.
It does.
In terms of screening and then coming down to decide what ultimately makes a festival.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so exciting is working with colleagues both locally and around the world. We get over 3,000 films entered to consider for the festival, and we don't stop at those. We go out into the world and ask filmmakers who've had films at the festival before and others. And so then we have to watch all those movies and get everything together and bring all these hundreds of filmmakers here, because, you know, another thing obviously that differentiates a festival from a regular movie-going experience is often the creator is there in person to talk about the film. We have a program that we started a couple years ago where we not only have filmmakers sometimes, but often we'll have experts on a topic of documentary, for example, or live music. So, yes, you're right. Organizing all that is quite a task.
Well, some of the statistics are pretty extraordinary. I mentioned close to 200 films. 75 shorts, 51 countries represented, and 38 languages, and also will include 6 world premieres and 7 North American premieres. Not only that, but the work of some 57 women directors.
Yeah. I would say inclusion, diversity, that's part of the mission of SF Film. So,
talk to us a little bit about the centerpiece event, which will be Patty Cakes, with the S being a dollar sign, this feature from 2016.
Yeah, I mean, we're really excited about this film for a number of reasons. One of them is that this is a film that was supported before it was made by SF Film, the organization that puts on the festival. We're a multifaceted organization. We have education programs, and we have a program called SF Film Makers. We are the largest grant-giving body for narrative features in the U.S., and so Patty Cakes was supported by a filmmaker grant early on. But more than that, it's just a really delightful movie. It was a big hit coming out of the Sundance Film Festival. And the central character is a woman who lives in New Jersey. She works in a bar. But she is just a great hip-hop artist. Mm-hmm. And she has dreams of making it big and getting across the river to Manhattan, which she can see from where she lives, but seems like it's a million miles away.
Neat. Well, we'll be hearing more about the film festival as we get closer to the festival itself. On April 13th, we'll have on Open Air local filmmakers Jason Susberg and Kate McLean to talk about their marquee presentation on Bill Nye's Science Guy. That work, it's part of their work. We'll talk about what they're doing on April 13th. Just a couple other highlights. Persistence of Vision Award to Aardman Animation. That's a great studio.
It is, but that was last year.
Oh,
this
year,
we're giving it to the wonderful local artist Lynn Hirschman Leeson, which is she is like a very groundbreaking artist on a lot of fronts. She was a innovative video artist. She has a show up actually right now at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, and we're honoring her for her work on film and video. One of the things that's exciting about this is that the 60th has really proven us the opportunity to both honor a lot of local work and work with a lot of our partner institutions in the Bay Area.
One other highlight I noticed, and I think I got this one right, is that William Hearst III will be talking in a panel discussion about Orson Welles' Citizen Kane, on which, you know, his grandfather, William Randolph Hearst, was the base of that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a really special presentation. The family has not spoken publicly about, you know, their relationship to, their reactions to this movie, which for a long time and still is by some people considered to be the best movie ever made. But of course, it was based on their family, fictionalized and non-fictionalized in ways that we're hoping that William R. Hearst and the wonderful film historian David Thompson will be talking about.
All kinds of highlights and the schedule entirely is at sffilm.org. I'm afraid that's all the time we have right now, Rachel, but I'm sure we're going to be talking as the film festival progresses, and I thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get... Well, an appropriate musical segue to our last and final segment, staying with the movie theme with my guest, Benjamin Simon. Hi, Ben.
Hi, David. Nice to see you again.
You too. Well, this Sunday represents quite a day at the movies, as you, SFCO, goes to the movies Sunday at the Fort Mason Center for the Arts and Culture as a benefit for the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra.
Yes, you've been talking today about live music and about film, and we are combining the two. The San Francisco Chamber Orchestra is having its 7th annual gala, and we're playing brand new music to Charlie Chaplin's 1916 30-minute film called The Pawn Shop, written by Donald Sosin. And so you will see this wonderful slapstick comedy by an early Charlie Chaplin, accompanied by live music from the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra.
Great. And also on the program, Disney's Plain Crazy from 1928. That's completely off my radar.
Yes. Well, a lot of people think that Steamboat Willie was the first appearance of Mickey Mouse, but it was actually Plain Crazy a year before. It was released as a silent animated short and didn't really get any traction with the public. And Steamboat Willie came out a year later with a soundtrack by Carl Stalling, and then Disney thought they released Plain Crazy the following year with a soundtrack, and it became a big hit. Donald Sosin will be accompanying that movie on the piano. He's a world-renowned film composer, travels the world, playing at festivals and improvising to movies and writing film music. He's a wonderful composer, and it should be a very exciting event. The party starts at 3 o'clock. As I said, it's a benefit for the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, which provides admission-free classical concerts and family events all through the season. And it will be followed by a dinner at Green's Restaurant.
I was going to say, that's just Act 1.
That's just Act 1. Act 2 is sold out, which is our dinner at Green's Restaurant. With some live music as well, but that we still have tickets for the film. So if you love classical music and you love Charlie Chaplin, we'd love to see you at the Cowell Theater on Sunday at 3 o'clock.
Fort Mason Center, SFCO.org for more information.
We are the SFCO. That's correct.
Indeed. Well, Ben, we're going to have you on next month because another full disclosure, we're going to be collaborating on a wonderful event for the next San Francisco Chamber Orchestra main event.
Yes, April is our Humor in Music Month, and we start the month off on the weekend of April 1st and 2nd with a set of family concerts in San Francisco, Burlingame, and Oakland called Silly Soloists, where we're featuring a saw, a tuba player, a whistler, and a typewriter as our family concert soloist. And then at the end of the month, as you said, I'm delighted to collaborate with you on a musical project. David and your colleague at over at KDFC, Rick Malone, if I'm allowed to
please,
mention
yes,
that,
of course.
That radio station here. It's on the lighter side, Humor in Music, and the featured work will be Peter Hubach's sportscast of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony with the live symphony orchestra referee, a horn that gets sent to the penalty box, and all sorts of musical fun. Music by Mozart and Haydn, but mostly Peter Hubach.
Very much looking forward to that collaboration with my good friend Rick Malone. He and I ran the Brooklyn Heights Music Society together back in the 90s.
I didn't know that.
Wonderful to be back with Rick. Also a fine musician, a fine viola player. But the main event is the SFCO Goes to the Movies. If you want to catch the pre-party and show this Sunday, more information at thesfco.org. We have a little bit of music of the sampling of Sosin's music. What's the excerpt we have here? Let's see. I believe it's from Showgirl.
Okay.
This is the music of Donald Sosin, who will be performing. His music will be performed by the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra live to films by Chaplin and Disney's Plain Crazy this coming Sunday. Ben, thanks for coming in. We're going to have you in next month to talk more about the PDQ Bach.
Thanks so much for having me in. Thank you.
Sosin's music will be performed by full orchestra this coming Sunday as part of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra benefit performances. I'm David Latulipe. You've been listening to Open Air. Our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org. If you'd like to send me a show segment suggestion, send me an email, david@kalw.org. My thanks to Neil Swinkels for producing the show. KALW.org for more information. Thanks for listening.